Now we're focusing on the president's comments on policing yesterday. People from across the country have been protesting against law enforcement since a grand jury decided not to indict a police officer who shot and killed an unarmed teen. Yesterday, President Obama announced the creation of a new task force on police and community relations, as well as funding for body cameras for police officers and new rules for military-style equipment used in police departments.
Michael Scott is with us now to talk about what the president had to say. He's the director of the Center for Problem-Oriented Policing, a nonprofit organization that works to improve police effectiveness and fairness. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, one of the things the president said yesterday is that he wants to avoid a militarized culture in local police departments across the country. Do you think this is a problem, that we have this kind of culture in some community police departments?
Certainly is. It's not new, this trend toward militarization of some, not all, but many police departments began really as far back as the 1980s, and as a response to, at that time, the war on drugs, especially the crack cocaine epidemic. And so there has been a steady increase in the adoption by local police of military weaponry, tactics, uniforms, and approaches to dealing with a number of street crime problems. So this is not a brand new issue.
And while the president says he doesn't want to militarize culture, he says he's not necessarily wanting to crack down on federal military-style equipment going to police departments. So is it the gear or is it the training that's part of the militarized culture? Is it a little of both?
Well, it's a little of both. We do have to keep in mind that the police are and always have been a paramilitary institution. There's nothing inherently wrong with some aspects of a military bearing and military discipline. They have their place in policing. The concern is when that approach and that look and that culture really begins to dominate and to dominate the more civil side of policing. So it really is not just a question of what equipment they have, but what equipment is visibly publicly displayed, is used in inappropriate circumstances, how the police officers appear to the general public in routine policing. There's a lot of different issues associated with this military culture.
So are there police departments in the country that have tackled this issue and said, hey, we need to draw the line, not to look so much like a paramilitary operation and do some things you talked about with a community-first approach?
Well, there's actually an interesting case study right in Wisconsin and in the department I know best, the Madison Police Department. If you go back to the late 1960s and early 1970s, when Chief David Cooper first became chief in Madison, he made a concerted effort to demilitarize the appearance of the Madison police, precisely to allay and to reduce some of the tension with the community in the wake of the anti-war riots. And so there has been a concerted effort in the city of Madison, but many departments around the country began to follow suit and follow Madison's lead on that. But in intervening years, again, since the 1980s, there's been more of a creep back toward the militarized look of police.
So does doing something like making a presidential statement, starting a task force, funding training at the federal level start to address these problems? Or is this something that has to happen from the bottom up at the local level?
Well, policing in the United States is fundamentally a local function, and the federal government can play a role. These sorts of national commissions, we've had them repeatedly throughout our nation's history since we've had organized police. We had no fewer than five of these national commissions in the late 1960s through the early 1970s, including taking a look at the police response to urban rioting and police contribution to those riots. So there are some positive things that can come out of presidential attention to these issues. But ultimately, the changes must occur at the local level.
Is there going to be resistance at the local level from police chiefs, maybe even mayors and city councils who want their policing to go a particular way?
I don't think so. I recently attended a meeting of a couple of hundred police chiefs here in Chicago, many of them really focusing on the rioting in Ferguson and other similar incidents around the country. And almost to a person, these chiefs were fairly eager to take steps that will be necessary to improve police working relationships with minority communities.
We're talking to policing expert Mike Scott now about President Obama's new rules on police equipment and things he wants to see change in police-community relationships in light of the unrest in Ferguson, Missouri, and around the country.
We're taking your calls now. Do you think the president went far enough in working to repair distrust between police and minority communities? Do you think body cameras are a good idea for police officers? What about military equipment for officers? And what changes would increase your trust in law enforcement? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're picking up our discussion with Mike Scott of the Center for Problem-Oriented Policing about the president's new standards on police gear, training, and community relations.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the president's comments about law enforcement? Do you think he went enough to restore trust in law enforcement? What would you like to see change when it comes to policing, maybe in your community? Do you think something like body cameras would be a good idea for police officers? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Before we go to callers, Mike, I wanted to ask you about that idea of body cameras for police officers. A lot of the protesters, including the family of the deceased in that Ferguson, Missouri case, saying, hey, we need this. The president offering funding for it. How much are these used already, and what kind of difference have they made, if any?
Well, they were first introduced by the British police maybe about 10 years ago. So the British and the Scottish police have a little bit of experience with these. American police began maybe about 5-6 years ago to experiment with them. So at this point, the momentum's already underway. It was even before the Ferguson incident for American police to begin to adopt these body cameras and to experiment with them. I would say most of the major cities are now at least experimenting with body cameras. And so we don't have definitive answers about what impact they have, but we do have some tentative information.
So what kind of tentative information? What are some of the first signals from the use of these?
Well, that there are some promising effects. It looks like they do have the capacity to change and improve both the police officer's behavior as well as civilians' behavior in interactions with police. And that's all to the good if that holds up. There's some potential to reduce frivolous complaints that some civilians make against police officers. And there's some possibility that could reduce some of the what we might think of as unnecessary arrests made by officers.
Have we seen downside to them?
Well, there's still a lot of fairly significant concerns, some of them relating to privacy, both the privacy of civilians who are being recorded and having their behavior, oftentimes not at their best, recorded and maybe made public, privacy issues for the police officer. There are also concerns about the public records that will be created and who's going to be able to watch these videos and under what circumstances. And, of course, we're not entirely sure how having a camera present in all of these police interactions might distort in a negative way the behavior and the actions of both police officers and civilians. So there's good potential, and there's some concerning potential as well.
Well, let's go to our callers now. We've got Stephen on the line in Fountain City. Stephen, hi.
Hi. It's great to be on with you guys.
What do you think, Stephen?
Well, I just wanted to say I noticed a few times that there were talk of, like, police officers in car cameras. They would shut them off before they, you know, abuse people or whatever. But as far as the body cameras, I think that the same problem could arise. And I just think it would make a lot more sense if dispatchers were controlling when the body cameras were actually turned on and when they were turned off so that there could be no tampering.
Stephen, thanks for the call. Is that something that anybody's doing, letting someone other than the officer, him or herself, control the body camera, Mike?
Well, I haven't heard of that being done, but I think that's a very thoughtful suggestion and one of the kinds of things that experimentation with the cameras would help to shed some light on. I think somebody ought to try doing that and see what impact that has.
Stephen, thanks for the call. We'll go to Mike in Algoma now. Mike, hi.
Good morning or good afternoon. My question has to do with lethal force. What happened to the use of stun guns and bean bags and other non-lethal ways of stopping a potential lawbreaker?
Mike, thanks for the call. Mike, what do you think? Have we seen a trend, any kind of trend away from non-lethal enforcement measures?
No, actually, the trend, I think, has continued in the favor of developing less than lethal weaponry. That most people are familiar with the brand name Taser, and that is the brand of stun gun, as the last caller described it, that's being fairly extensively used by police around the country. Although there are some concerns about the potential lethal effects, unintended lethal effects of tasers, there's also been an awful lot of positive benefit that's come out of their use.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We've got Daryl on the line now in Couderay. Daryl, hi.
Hi, thank you for the program. I think the president spoke out and Eric Holder spoke out. Then they both went to the sidelines in this game of death on people of color. It's a sad day in America for all in the end, I think.
Daryl, thanks for the call. So Mike Scott, he's saying President Obama needs to not make this announcement and step back, but keep rolling on this issue, I guess.
Well, he, from what I heard the president say, he said he intended to stick with it. You know, remains to be seen if that's going to be possible for him. He's the president of the United States with an awful lot to be concerned with, and he's going to delegate most of this work to this commission. Mm-hmm. But so long as he comes back to the issue and hears from the commission from time to time, that's really what's needed from the president.
Well, let's look at that commission now that the president announced, chaired by Philadelphia Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey and Lori Robinson. She's a professor, a former assistant attorney general at the Justice Department. What kind of message do we get from those two being picked to lead this effort?
Well, I know both individuals are both high-quality people. They're both well-known in the police field. They've got good reputations and good standing. And I think it at least sends a signal that the president has given some careful thought to who ought to be leading this commission.
Now, policing, as you said, happens mostly at the local level. Does that mean we end up with a patchwork where some communities are doing great, others are doing worse? Is it useful to try to get a national standard to which all of those have to adhere?
Well, patchwork is more or less what we've had since the 1840s when we first began creating American police departments. Has never been otherwise in this country, possibly never will. But there have been some important moves toward national standards, accreditation standards that are voluntary but abided by many police agencies. There's a lot of effort on the part of most police agencies in this country to try to adopt what are considered model or best practices, even if they're not mandated by the federal government.
Another announcement yesterday from Attorney General Eric Holder saying the Justice Department is going to announce updated guidance for a profiling in an effort to end racial profiling. Do you see any major changes coming out of that announcement?
Well, that too is an issue that has been on the police agenda for several decades now, even going back to just prior to 9/11, that was racial profiling was the number one concern. And so there has been some positive movement in terms of developing police policies to prohibit racial profiling, improving police training to acknowledge and understand the subconscious bias that may go into policing. But clearly a lot more work needs to be done on that front.
Now, you work and you've worked for some time on the concept of problem-oriented policing. What is that and how would it inform some of the issues we've been talking about?
Well, it actually stems relates quite directly to these issues, and that the whole idea, which was developed at the University of Wisconsin Law School, was to move the police away from an excessive reliance on criminal arrest and prosecution as the sole means of achieving policing objectives, and to develop alternatives to those the use of force and the use of coercion to achieve police objectives. That's a lot of what the problem-oriented approach encourages, And to the extent that we can get police to reduce their reliance on criminal arrest and prosecution, that has great potential to reduce some of the tension, the underlying tension that is giving rise to the unrest in many minority communities.
Who takes the lead in making that kind of transition happen?
Well, the police have to take the lead because it's essentially a call for a reform to the way in which police think about their job, organize themselves, and the kinds of strategies and tactics they adopt. So police have to take the lead, but not to do so alone. It was intended to be an approach that engaged the community very directly in identifying and resolving the public safety problems that exist in every community.
Well, maybe we can dig a little deeper into that sometime in the future. Mike, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Michael Scott. He's director of the Center for Problem-Oriented Policing. That's a nonprofit organization that works to improve police effectiveness and fairness. With us to talk about the president's new guidance on police gear, tactics, funding of body cameras for law enforcement.